Hi, this is Skip Bayless, and thank you for listening to the Undisputed Podcast. I just posted a personal story on my Facebook page. If you want to know what I'm really all about, what makes me tick, what made me, you should read what I wrote about my upbringing. You should read about how I succeeded in spite of a mean-spirited drunk of a father and a mother who was too interested in herself to ever be much interested in me. You should read about my athletic achievements and my chokes. You'll find my story on my Facebook page. And now, let's get the show started.
Welcome to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. This podcast is a condensed version of today's episode of Undisputed, handpicked with the best segments and discussions. Skip, Shannon, let's go.
The Cowboys open up the playoffs by hosting the Seahawks Saturday night on Fox. Now, Dallas has won 7 of their last 8, but they're getting no love from USA Today. They ranked all 12 playoff teams, and Dallas came in last place. And they asked the big question, saying, quote, does anyone have faith in the passing game to produce against a good defense? So, Chris, are the Cowboys in for an early playoff exit?
Look, Russell Wilson scares me. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I don't put anything past him. So I have to give Seattle a good shot. But I do think the Dallas Cowboys will win this game against Seattle. And I think they're a threat to do some damage. I wouldn't pick them to get to the Super Bowl, but I do think they can have a nice playoff run. Here's why I like them over Seattle. Number one, the Cowboys are 7-1 at home. Okay, they're one of the toughest teams in the league at home. Coupled with the fact that Seattle has not been very good on the road, 4-4 on the road, but haven't beaten a team with a winning record this season on the road. They're so bad on the road, they lost to San Francisco. Okay, so Seattle's not strong on the road. The other thing, their strength is running the football. Okay, and they have a weak offensive line and a banged up offensive line, but their strength is still running the football. Well, the Dallas Cowboys' defensive strength is against the rush. So I think the Cowboys will be able to, you know, shut or slow down the Seahawks' running game and force Russell Wilson to have to beat them by himself. On the other side of the ball, obviously the Cowboys want to run with Ezekiel Elliott. He's probably the best running back in the league, him and Todd Gurley. And then Seattle is 30th. In the NFL in rush defense, meaning they give up almost 5 yards a carry per rush. So I think the Cowboys, that's the formula. I like Dak. I do think Dak's a franchise quarterback. But Dak is what I'll call a playmaking manager. He's a game manager who can make big plays, mainly with his feet. But he also, as he showed against the Giants, can make some strong throws when necessary. So I like Dak, but let's not get it twisted. The formula for the Cowboys to win is Ezekiel Elliott and the running game setting the tone, and then Dak plays well alongside that. And I think they'll be able to do that against Seattle.
I think the Cowboys are fraudulent. And I think people get caught up with win totals, but if you dig a little bit deeper, Chris, they've had 7 of their 10 wins against teams under 500.
Does that include the Saints?
That Saints game, you could pick the Saints game. No, it doesn't include the Saints game, but if you remember that game, they did went scoreless in the second half.
And
they won 13-10. They barely won.
They won! I don't care if they won by half a point.
The Saints have won 10 games in a row. They were due to lose a game. Just hear me out. They're fraudulent. The last 4 weeks, the defense has allowed 25 or more, average of 25 points. So the defense is heading south. They're South America's team, not America's team. I'm talking about the defense. When you look at Dak Prescott, you better hope it's the defense that can get you there, because he's a middle-of-the-road quarterback. He's not a Russell Wilson. He's QBR, 17th. Football Focus has him at 19th. This is where Russell Wilson is. So Dak. And if you look at some of the other quarterbacks who are even have a higher quarterback rating than him, you're talking about like Matthew Stafford and Mariota And it's a list of guys.
Better than Mariota.
They're all guys who didn't even make the playoffs, yet they're higher than him. I'm just talking about QBR. So he's a poor man's playoff quarterback. And I know, like, he had the game against the Giants. Everybody's all excited and all that. I'm telling you, this defense is going the other way, trending the wrong way. Early on, they were giving up, like, 17 points, and they were playing really well. I'm just saying, of late, the defense hasn't been there. And I'm going to put my money, even though it's a home game, and I give you that, in the NFL, playing at home is a big deal. They've played very well at home this year. But when you talk about Seattle, they're battle-tested. They've won a Super Bowl. Russell Wilson
was
there.
This Seattle team,
it's not the same exact team,
right.
But you still have the same coach. You still have some of the same players. And you have the quarterback who's a proven winner, who has won big games in big spots on the road, at home. That goes a long way. And we saw Green Bay. The year they were 13-3, Green Bay came into Dallas and beat the Cowboys on their home field. Do you remember that? Dak Prescott was the quarterback. And
he was a rookie.
That doesn't matter. They were 13-3 during the regular season.
That doesn't matter. Come on.
He's a rookie. I'm telling you, in that situation, just playing at home isn't enough when you're playing good teams. When you're playing the also-rans. Yes, they won 10 games because they played the NFC least. They were 5-1 in that division. Giants stunk.
Philadelphia's the defending Super Bowl champion.
Yes, but they
had to play them twice.
I know, and they beat them twice, but they were bad. They bounced
back. They beat New Orleans. That wasn't that long ago either. They held them to 10 points.
You're still hanging on that.
Yeah, I'm hanging on it. The best offense in the league, they held to 10 points, and you just going to act like that didn't happen?
It was a bad day at the office for Drew Brees. That's all that was.
Is Dak Prescott a winner?
Dak Prescott has won, but he hasn't beaten the good teams, and that's why I'm not buying in on Dak Prescott. So if they win, if they lose this game, Chris, this will be another example. I guarantee you Dallas fans will go, see, Dak, he's not good enough. That's the problem. He can't win you a game. Everything has to go right to win a game with Dak Prescott at quarterback. You got to have the running game up to speed. You got to have the defense doing what it does. All those things, and then you have him make a couple of throws that he needs to make, and you win. But
Rob,
if anything doesn't go right, no, it doesn't.
That's true for all but a handful of quarterbacks.
I understand,
you know that.
But I'm telling
you. There's like five quarterbacks that's
not true.
And those
are the guys that advance in the playoffs.
When Drew Brees didn't have the supporting cast the last few years, they were going 7-9 every year. I mean, most quarterbacks need some help. And those that don't have help are only going so far. Dak Prescott, see, you're not looking at the intangibles. Dak Prescott has the intangibles. It's not just about arm strength and running ability and things like that. It is also about your presence. Are you a leader of men? He is a leader of men.
The only time people bring up intangibles is when you can't come up with the stats and the numbers don't work for you.
No, because that's the thing that makes Tom Brady the GOAT.
No,
it's his intangibles.
It's not intangible.
And I can bring up numbers after number
after
number.
I'm talking about that's why people say that about Dak, because when you look at the numbers, they're unimpressive.
No,
he throws for 200 yards a game, 180. He'll give you a bad interception. He'll underthrow a couple guys. He'll overthrow some people and miss throws. That's why people always say, when they win, they go, well, it's the intangibles. No, he's not that guy. That guy yet. And that's why they can lose at home.
It's watching a guy command a team. It's watching a guy under pressure. Just seeing the way he stepped in for Tony Romo as a rookie, that showed you
they had the best offensive line.
Still, he's a rookie who wasn't expected to do anything.
They had all the other stuff that worked in his favor. That's all I'm saying. And they held him on a leash, Chris, so that he didn't make, like, a lot of bad throws. Or they limited what they wanted him to do so he couldn't turn the ball over. I get it as a rookie quarterback, but they didn't trust him in that way. All I'm saying is he's not a playoff-tested quarterback that's going to win a game for you. I'll take Russell Wilson in a big game over Dak Prescott.
Look, Wilson, like I said, he scares me. He's the same as Prescott. He's better, and he has the intangibles. He's a winner. But Dak, to your point, I'm not saying he's Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady or somebody that's going to win a game by himself, but he's got Ezekiel Elliott. That team has been totally different with Amari Cooper. Like, they've got some weapons now, not to mention the defense. And again, that Seattle offensive line is depleted. Wilson's going to be running around having to make plays. I like the Cowboys' chances. And stop underestimating them. I'm trying to help you.
You're not trying,
I'm trying to help you.
I'm trying to help you to stop drinking the Kool-Aid when it comes to the Cowboys. It's always the same thing. The same couple teams everybody's all in on. It's LeBron and the Lakers. It's the Cowboys. I just don't, based on what, the Cowboys have won two playoff games since 1995.
That has nothing to do with this.
It does have something to do with it.
Was Dak Prescott around for that?
I'm
was just, Ezekiel Elliott? Was Amari Cooper?
You can say
was
all
the defense?
You want.
No.
All I know is that they haven't won, and Tony Romo was a better quarterback. I'm not buying into the Cowboys until Dak Prescott goes out there, wins a game, and he shows me that he can do it. So until that, the jury's out.
If he wins this game, is he good enough?
Well, if he wins this game, if he is the big part and reason why he wins the game, maybe I'll change my mind. But until then, I'll always pick the other quarterback who's proven.
Isn't that what I said about James Harden and the Houston Rockets?
No, but that's just going against that's basketball. No
mercy. Now, we're moving on to the drama in Pittsburgh. Multiple reports say Antonio Brown threw a football at Ben Roethlisberger during practice last Wednesday, then decided not to practice the rest of the week. AB showed up at the stadium on Sunday, but was declared inactive and left at halftime. A Steelers player called the situation with AB, quote, embarrassing and the worst I've seen. Now, we are joined by NFL analyst Mark Schlereth. Mark, is Antonio Brown the biggest problem in Pittsburgh?
Oh, he's a big problem. There's no question. Is he the biggest problem? No. He's not the biggest problem. I think one thing, he's been empowered, he's been empowered to be a turd. And that's what it comes down to. You know, Mike Tomlin has a mantra. I'm going to put up with it until I can replace it. Like, what kind of mantra is that? Right? I'll put up with you. In the ultimate team game, being the ultimate selfish player, I'll put up with that because of your production? Well, what message does it send? I always say, what message does it send to the other 53 guys? I understand that not everybody's created equal, right? So I understand that sometimes you make concessions for star players to a degree, right? So you're not all treated equal, but you have to be treated fairly. And what you create in a situation like that is you create animosity within your own locker room, and then animosity from upstairs to downstairs, from the coaches' offices and the management offices to the locker room, to the players. Yeah. And ultimately, you know, here's the deal. Mike Tomlin didn't play in the NFL. He was a football player, but he didn't play in the NFL because he wasn't talented enough. Wasn't good enough to play in the National Football League. And there's no shame in that. There is absolutely no shame in not being able good enough to be in the National
Bill
Football
Belichick
League.
Bill Belichick didn't play.
Right.
He's one of the greatest coaches.
Right.
There's a lot of guys like that.
There is no shame in that. But I'm telling you, in that locker room, when you create that division and you create that animosity, not only between the players, but between upstairs and downstairs, man, that's a tough situation to overcome. There's a reason they're one of the most talented teams in the National Football League, and they're sitting out watching the playoffs right where you and I are watching the playoffs, right from, you know, their couches.
Are you saying Tomlin may not understand that dynamic because he never was a part of it as a player?
Well, I don't know that I don't know why he doesn't understand that he is creating animosity within his own locker room by allowing those things to happen. I mean, you hear all kinds. Yeah, I mean, this is par for the course.
Right. But this,
I mean, you hear these stories about Antonio Brown all the time.
But this might be the reason that they've been the underachievers that they have, because you notice, Mark, you look on paper and you say they're loaded. They should be making moves. They haven't won a Super Bowl since 2008, right? A decade now. Mm-hmm. We're in 2019. And you're right. I think it's a culture there where guys are allowed to get away with so much stuff. Mostly, and you know this because you played, guys who are that talented get a lot of leeway. But it's gotten out of control to where it just, to me, seems like a number of distractions. And not just him, because there's other things. Big Ben's gone on the radio and ripped teammates.
Yeah.
And made it other people's fault and not him and hasn't played well. There's been all kinds of other stuff that's gone on with them. Even the Le'Veon Bell situation where you had teammates ripping him, you know, because he is trying to secure a future for his family and him. And that was out of, had you ever seen that from players?
No.
Where a guy is trying to get paid.
Right.
I wonder, if
that's a culture, though.
Yeah, I wonder if that's the culture that, I don't know if Le'Veon was doing things that obviously he's had his issues, too, that guys just feel like there's a lack of discipline. So they were ready, they were willing to call him out, which was, what I think, look, I agree with you. I think Antonio's a huge problem, but the bigger problem is the culture from top down. And I think Tomlin's a good coach. I wouldn't fire him right now necessarily.
Hard to fire a guy who doesn't even have a losing record.
Right. My question is this. Can you as a head coach, if he's been a player's coach for this whole time there,
right,
can he all of a sudden next year be the disciplinarian, you know, and the hard guy that now, you know, changes the culture? Or are players going to think that's phony and see through it, and then it may even get worse?
Well, I mean, I think that, one, I agree with you. I think he's a good coach. I don't think there's any question that he's been a good coach. I think he's a bad manager of people. And you know, when you look at that, can you change that culture? I think the first part of changing that culture is you have got to be able to walk in there and say, hey, guys, I have put up with this. I have made these mistakes. And from this point forward, I'm no longer making those mistakes. But then you have to, if you're gonna put that down, or you're gonna throw that out there, then you have to adhere to that.
Right.
You've got to be able to maintain that. You know, there's two types of people in this world. People that walk into a room and energize it, and people who walk out of a room and energize it. Antonio Brown walks out of the locker room and it's energized. Good, he's gone. And you can see that going on right now. But that, again, I think that starts from top. I think it starts from Tomlin.
But, Mark, they can't do anything with him, with his contract. Probably untradeable,
he's
right?
31. He's 31. They can, get much
can they do something?
What? Well, I mean, you know, one thing about this league that I know to be true, because I spent a lot of time in it, is that most organizations and most coaches feel there's enough ego there. I always said this. You think the egos are big downstairs in the locker room? Walk upstairs, the coaches' offices, right? I mean, there's not a coach that doesn't think that under my expert tutelage, I can't fix him, right? So there will be, I mean, the guy is as productive as you can be. So there will be a market. Now, one, I just don't think everybody has a dependent position. Everybody depends on one another. That's why it's the ultimate team game, right? Like, I don't understand how receivers get to the point where they don't understand that 10 other guys have to do their jobs exceptionally well for me to touch a ball.
Right.
Like, where do you lose that? Like, where did you become so self-absorbed?
Because, you know, the receiver gets all the glory because people don't see all the other stuff.
Right.
And where does the camera focus in? The guy who caught it? And he's in the end zone.
So, right. Yeah.
So I think that's where the inflated...
Inflated self-value is. But I would say of all the dependent positions in the National Football League, the most dependent is the wide receiver. And so why you would spend... Like, New England has a model. They don't ever spend that much money on receivers. They go to Super Bowls. Like, there's a model there. Why you would make him your highest paid player or one of your highest paid players, why you would spend that kind of money on an Odell Beckham Jr. or an Antonio Brown or any of these guys is beyond me. It truly is. Yeah, he'll be tough to move because of how much money he's being paid right now. But again, I mean, it comes down to, do you have the intestinal fortitude to say, this is who we are, we've gotten away from it, we're going to get back to it, and if you don't want to play by our rules, you can sit here, we'll pay you, you know, you'll be on the team, but you're not going to get a play.
They got enough talent where, I mean, Smith-Schuster now has, you know, emerged as a number one receiver.
Mm-hmm.
James Washington, they're high on him. If you could get something for Antonio Brown, just something, you're not going to get equal value, but something
right.
decent. You know, this team, when they let LeGarrette Blount go, you know, Le'Veon Bell steps up.
Mm-hmm.
When they, you know, this year, James Conner stepped up.
Yeah.
I think they, in the name of changing the culture, if they could get a good trade for it, then I would do it.
See,
but I just don't think they're going to be able to get it.
I'm not so positive that everybody has to be a choir boy. And, you know, there's always guys.
Sure.
And you want to be able to work with them. There's some guys who are just so talented. And it's hard for them to always toe the line or, do you know what I mean? And you just
Absolutely.
Have to work. You play
sure.
with guys like that. So I'm not so sure that Pittsburgh can be that team that you're talking about where you're giving up. Le'Veon Bell is going to be gone. You're going to trade A.B., and Ben Roethlisberger is going the other way, quarterback-wise.
Mm-hmm.
You wind up stripping a team that should be in the mix every year that won't be if you make those kind of moves because you're just trying to clean up the locker room.
Right. But part of it, part of the other part is when you look at it and when you watch and you break down Pittsburgh, part of it is what you've allowed the identity to become. Like, you're going to let your quarterback sit in shotgun and throw the ball just about on every down, you know, because you have so many talented players on the outside. I think a lot of kind of coordinator types get caught up into this. Like, they get caught up into philosophically, hey, all the rules are being bent to throwing the ball. We've got an all-star quarterback. We're going to throw it all over the place. And, yeah, you're going to make a lot of dynamic plays doing that, right? You're going to have a lot of what they call explosives, 20-plus yard plays, right? But the other part is the negative explosives, the interceptions, the other issues that come up with that, the sack strip fumbles and all those things. One of those, you know, like three touchdowns, I mean, it takes three touchdowns or three big explosive plays or four big explosive plays to make up for one of those negative explosive plays. And those are the things. I mean, to me, I look at as talented as they are up front, philosophically, they have to come back more to balance than they are. They just, I just always watch them on film. I go, they just refuse to do anything but essentially throw it because they've got so many weapons. Right. And that's a mindset with the Steelers right now.
They didn't even use Connor as much as you might think they could have, you know, right. The way he was running the ball.
Absolutely. Think about when they were winning championships. It was bus driven. Right, they were riding the bus.
Right.
They weren't flying to championships. They were bus riding to championships, and they haven't won one since.
I was going to say, and it's been a long time since they won. So it sounds like they got to really do a big change about the philosophy of who they are. Where are the Steelers now?
Right.
You know what I mean? Are you just a pass-happy team, or are you going back to the basics of what got you championships?
Hey, J.J. Smith-Schuster, if you say, hey, we're going to go back to running the ball and we want you to get mixed up in the briar patch and start hitting people and doing those things, you know what he'd say? I go, I'm in. I'm a football player. He'd be pouting on the sideline, you know, crying about not getting enough opportunities. This is the ultimate team game, man. And to win championships, if that's truly what it's all about, and I believe that it is, to truly be a championship-caliber squad and a championship-caliber team, you have to care more about the other guys on your team than you care about yourself. And I doubt that AB cares about anybody more than he cares about himself.
So with that being said, Mark, before we let you go, do you think this is something that AB can come back from in the locker room? Can he get that and earn that respect back in the locker room?
Absolutely. The locker room is one of the most forgiving places in the world. I mean, you know, in every locker room, you got four or five touch guys.
Mm-hmm.
Every locker room does. How do you manage your touch guys,
right?
And the problem is if all your touch guys are the superstars, like, then who's gonna reel you in?
Right.
Like, who's going to bring you together? And especially if the organization isn't going to hold anybody accountable. You know what? It's really hard to hold people accountable as a player. You're a leader in that locker room. If the organization isn't going to back you when you're trying to hold Antonio Brown accountable, mm-hmm. then you've lost. There's no way the locker room can police itself.
Yeah, there needs to be a big change in
Pittsburgh.
Mark, thank you so much
Absolutely.
For joining us.
No mercy.
Now, the Eagles announced yesterday that Nick Foles will start Sunday in the Eagles' wild card game in Chicago. Foles bruised his ribs in the fourth quarter of Sunday's win, but he reportedly avoided broken bones. Foles has led the Eagles to three straight wins, and we all remember he was named the Super Bowl MVP last season. We are joined by Jason McIntyre. Jason, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Thank you for joining us.
Happy New Year, man.
Boom.
We'll let it all out. And do you believe the Foles magic will continue?
No, Alex. Unfortunately, it will not. Guys, listen, we saw them last year, okay? Nick Foles was magical at home in Philadelphia. Now he's got to go on the road to Chicago. Probably the worst possible matchup for this guy. We're talking about an immobile quarterback with bruised ribs going against that Bears pass rush. Third in the league in sacks this year, okay? Khalil Mack, we know what they can do. And then you look at the Eagles offense, okay? Break down, what do they do well? Well, they don't run the football, okay? They haven't had a 100-yard rusher this year. They're very one-dimensional. Well, then you go, okay, well, Nick Foles loves his tight end, Zach Ertz. That's his guy, right? Led the team in receptions a couple weeks ago against the Texans. Foles under pressure. He looks to Zach Ertz. What do the Bears do well? They defend tight ends. They're third in the league defending tight ends. Everything Chicago does is going to stop Nick Foles in Philadelphia. Guys, I just, this smells like a bloodbath to me. I think the Bears win big. I don't think Philly has any chance here.
You know what? I love Chicago, and you're right. I mean, Khalil Mack has totally revitalized that defense and that team overall, and it's hard to pick against them, especially at home. But I'm going with Nick Foles.
Wow.
this dude has some mojo. Mm-hmm. It's as simple as that. And it's not just playoff. That's the misconception. If you go back to 2013, take away the St. Louis Rams season, Jeff Fisher, Jared Goff looked horrible under Jeff Fisher. So I'm not going to put all that on Nick Foles. Since 2013, the Philadelphia Eagles are 21-6 with Nick Foles as a starting quarterback. And you mentioned Zach Ertz being taken away. His favorite target is Alshon Jeffrey.
Okay.
And so Jeffrey's been totally revitalized since Foles has come along. And under Carson Wentz, this team scored 30 or more points one time in 11 games to start, or when he started in the season. In the last three games with Nick Foles, they scored 30 twice. One of them was against Houston, which has a really strong defense. The other was against the LA Rams, which, you know, we thought was going to have a really strong defense. And you got Aaron Donald, and you talk about a pass rusher. Okay, he had to deal with that. They scored 30-plus against those two teams. And Washington is no slouch that they just beat. So, look, this team, I don't know what it is with Nick Foles and the Philadelphia Eagles, but they get rejuvenated, they get revitalized. He must be a great leader. He brings a calming presence. I think they simplify the game plan because he can't do as much as Carson Wentz. And it works for them, and I'm giving them a good shot.
Wow.
You're
picking them outright to win.
I'm going to pick them. I mean, hey.
Chris, I don't know what Bears defense you've been watching, because I don't see that. And I love Nick Foles. I think he's one of those guys. We saw him last year outbest Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. Tom Brady threw for 500 yards, but Nick Foles made all the throws and was the MVP.
And that wasn't in Philadelphia, was it?
That was not in
Philadelphia. No, it wasn't. No.
They didn't have a home field advantage.
But in that case, though, sometimes you get caught up. This is the problem. If Nick Foles is the guy you think he is, he would be a starting quarterback for some other team. Nick Foles is the guy I could give my car keys to go to the store to get a loaf of bread. He'll be back. Everything will be great. When I give him the car, he'll crash it. Because the start of the season, he was the starting quarterback. And he didn't play well.
They were 1-1.
Every time they give him the keys to the car, he doesn't play. He's not that guy.
Did you hear what I thought? I thought that was right too.
That.
But
no,
I looked 21-6 as a starter.
He's not better than Wentz. And if Wentz was healthy, Wentz would be playing. Of course, you have an affection for him because he won a Super Bowl and a Super Bowl MVP. I get all that, but it's not going to erase what kind of defense the Bears have. And I'm telling you, the magic will run out. The Eagles, I thought, were going to make it back. They were my Super Bowl pick to make it back, but I thought Carson Wentz was going to come back and have something to play for since his ring was cubic zirconia, because he didn't have a real one.
Oh,
but that didn't work out, and you know, he got hurt, and they stumbled, and they just couldn't
and
get it.
Have they not been better with Nick Foles?
Well, it's only been two games?
But it's only a couple of games, and I'm just saying,
Washington, basically an Arena League team with a third-string, fourth-string quarterback.
How many games Washington
win? Let's back off. I don't know, but it was they were all injured, and they didn't matter.
Houston and the Rams.
Well, no,
Houston was playing for playoff seeding.
Was quality, Chris. I think what you're missing here is this was a late season run. It was fun. It was exciting. Do you know how good Chicago is?
Yes, and it's tough.
Do you know how cold it's going to be in Chicago? Do you know how fearsome that defense is? Tell them, Rob. Tell him. Come on, he just doesn't get it. Chris, I'm trying to help you here,
but
man.
But the
Bears. Eagles got no shot.
That's your wingman?
Let him points allowed. I mean, you could go they've done everything that they needed to do defensively. Third and yards allowed. You could go down the line. The magic runs out.
I get it.
Chicago runs out for Nick Foles, I understand.
I don't trust Trubisky. You were talking about a blowout. How many points is Trubisky going to put up?
It's not about Trubisky. It's about the defense.
A blowout is about Trubisky putting up a bunch of
points. It can be a field position game. Why don't you trust Trubisky? Why?
Because he's all right. He's not great.
But wait a minute. Their defense had 36.
Chicago
36
is tough. I know.
Turnovers.
They get a lot of interceptions. They're tough.
That sets up Trubisky.
I'm not saying anything really against Chicago. I'm just saying this is the team that won the Super Bowl last year. This is the team that they feel rejuvenated. They're building shrines to Nick Foles. They won the Super Bowl. You know they have talent.
A shrine in the locker room with some dirty socks and
whatever the case,
bars.
Whatever on, works Chris, for them. That. I don't care if it was jock straps. Whatever works for them. And this team is it. They weren't just talking about when Nick Foles got inserted into the lineup. They weren't just talking about let's make a playoff run. Let's have some fun at the end. They started believing we are going to repeat. And I'm not predicting that, but I'm saying I think Nick Foles will get this team past Chicago.
You're still living in the past. You're always drawing back from any quarterback that won a Super Bowl. Tom Brady won a Super Bowl, so of course he's going
he
to win.
He won it last
Nick
year.
Foles, Nick Foles won a Super
you
Bowl,
act like
so
it was
of course he's
2003.
Going to win. Yeah, but you know that if you were to do that run all over again, it wouldn't happen.
Hey,
it's
Chris,
a once-in-a-lifetime situation.
Chris, Alex
Nick
mentioned
Foles.
The early part of the season, okay? We saw him lose, I believe it was to Tampa.
He was 1-2.
Okay, so they 1-2. Why did they rush Carson Wentz back?
Look, I'm not saying Nick Foles is Aaron Rodgers. All I'm saying is this team plays better with him. 21-6. What's wrong
with
that?
You just said they were 1-2 this year with him at the beginning.
1-1 at the beginning, and then they won 3 straight when they had to, backs against the wall. And if Carson Wentz, and I get it, the age, the contract situations, he's your quarterback of the future.
Any GM in the NFL, if you gave them those two guys and said to pick which quarterback, it would be Carson
And you know
Wentz.
What else I'm going to say? Any GM in the NFL, if Carson Wentz gets a clean bill of health tomorrow, I'm still starting Nick
I would agree with that.
Without question. You would start Wentz.
I would start Wentz.
Why?
If he has a clean bill
you,
of health.
First of all, the team didn't play well under him. Secondly, they would be entirely deflated if he came back.
I'm going back to you since you like to go to the past and pick up stuff. Carson Wentz was going to be the MVP of this league.
He had a whole year to live up to that. He had a whole year this year
to
live up to it.
That was the caliber of play, the play for him.
That was last year.
Yes.
What did he do this year?
You just told me that Nick Foles won a Super Bowl last year.
Super Bowl is different than being a regular season MVP.
Last year, you're talking about, I'm telling you what he did.
A Super Bowl, and I'm also talking about the last year. No, I'm talking about the last 3 games this year. The last 3 regular season games against good teams, 2 of which were playing
these aren't
for
good
something.
Teams. The Bears are the best defense in the league.
Houston
the
is a really good team.
In Chicago.
Houston is a great team.
The Bears
the Rams
have a real
a great
secondary.
Team.
The Texans secondary
it.
Is
I'm
awful.
Not, look, I just think the dude has some magic, and I think it'll get them past Chicago. Chicago is great.
What kind of
you
magic
can give
are we
me
talking?
All their accolades.
Like pixie dust,
Chris,
magical
you got,
beans.
You give me
what
all
you
their – the same type of magic he used to win the Super Bowl last year. How about that?
They had a much better team. They lost coaches from the staff to other teams in the league. Like, they are not
nearly
as good.
Did that hurt him in the last 3 games?
Well, what about the rest of the season? Where was this team?
He was on the bench.
Oh, so it's all Nick Foles. That's the reason they're here.
You can't deny the difference.
Listen, I like what he's done. I like what he's done. But you are also conceding that Carson Wentz is the better quarterback. You're just going with this magical. They're on a carpet ride. Nick Foles is going to take them to the Super Bowl.
What if they – and I don't think it's going to happen. But what if they win the Super Bowl with Foles?
Oh, my goodness.
What you doing with Carson
What
Wentz?
If I win the lottery tomorrow?
No,
I mean, come on. Like,
don't act like it's unrealistic. Nobody thought this exact time a year ago, today, same time, everything, nobody gave the Eagles
2
a
home
chance.
Games. They did have 2 home games
Still,
last year.
It makes a big
care.
Difference
nobody,
in the NFL,
Did
Chris?
Anybody give them a chance?
No, nobody thought they
were
going to win.
I believe they were favored in both games in the playoffs last year.
Did you give them a chance?
I did not, but that's just me. That's just me.
You got magic beans. I know you're from New Orleans. You got a voodoo doll in your pocket, too. What do you got? What do you got working?
No voodoo for me. I just see. I see. I'm a seer. I see.
So if he takes him to the Super Bowl, what are you doing? You're booting Carson Wentz, saying thanks for your service. We're going to trade you
Carson
to
Wentz
Jacksonville.
Has proven to be injury prone. Nick Foles is only 30. I think he'll be 31 soon. I mean, if he led him to another Super Bowl,
can I give you an example of a guy who started his career, he was injury prone and wound up shaking that injury bug. Matthew Stafford got hurt his first couple of years with the Lions. No, I'm just
that's
help your argument.
Come on, hurt yourself. Come
that's
on.
Who you want to put
I'm
all
making,
your stuff
I'm
on?
Making the point that you can shake the injury bug, and he hasn't been hurt in a long time. So don't let the first couple of years when a guy
gets hurt. He goes back to college.
No, he did.
But
Stafford was hurt his first couple of years with the Lions, and people thought he's so brittle.
That's worked out really well.
How many playoff wins?
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the health issue.
You always go to your Detroit bag when you got nothing else to say.
Is that what it is?
Another. How many mic drops?
Well, the thing, you can't deny the energy spark that Foles has brought these last three games. You can't deny that. But they are now going up against one of the best teams. They're going up against Chicago. It's going to be – we're going to have to see what happens this weekend.
Who you with, Alex? You playing both sides of the fence.
I'm not. I'm going to take Chicago.
Again, Chris is the
– this is the smart side of the table right here.
I'm not mad at you because the Bears are legit.
But I'm also like I'm backing up Nick Foles. Like he deserves to start this game.
No, you with them.
Look at that. Chris, go over there.
All right. No mercy. Now, one of the best debates in the NFL will be the choice for Offensive Rookie of the Year. Baker Mayfield led the Browns to 7 wins, and on Sunday, he set the record for the most TD passes by a rookie quarterback with 27. While in New York, Saquon Barkley had 15 total touchdowns this season, and on Sunday, he became the third rookie in the NFL in NFL history with at least 2,000 total yards. And we are joined once again by Jason McIntyre, who is still with us. So, Jason, who deserves to be Rookie of the Year?
I think this one's a layup, without question. I think it's got to be my guy, Baker Mayfield. I know we've had our issues. He had blocked me on social media earlier this year. Now I'm unblocked because I've said nice things. But I'm saying nice
things.
That's
the friend you want to be blocked.
Baker Mayfield has been incredible. Now, I don't know how you judge Rookie of the Year. Is it just the stats? I don't know. Then it's a toss-up. But when you factor in the culture change in Cleveland, they go from how many wins last year to 7 this year? Just remind me, how many wins did the Browns have last year? I've forgotten, Rob. Just give me the number.
They had 1 win.
Cleveland had 1 win.
Was that culture change?
Did they? You sure?
Or was it 1 year?
He was starting under Hugh Jackson.
2 years ago.
And it was the culture was the same, right?
No.
When
he got rid of – you're giving Greg Williams all the credit for the Browns?
Five and three under him.
Baker Mayfield, Alex, I believe he set the rookie passing touchdown record. Mm-hmm. Eclipsed Russell Wilson, eclipsed Peyton Manning. But I don't want to just go big picture. I'll look at a small game like Week 17, okay? Baker Mayfield's facing the number 2 defense in the league, Baltimore Ravens, okay? They've given up 2 300-yard passers this year. That's it. Pat Mahomes, who everybody has as the NFL MVP, and guess who else? Baker Mayfield, not once, but twice, threw for over 300 yards against the second best defense in the league. I know, Rob, he had an interception at the end.
No, don't poo-poo it, because when the game was on the line.
He's a rookie quarterback.
No.
What do you expect on the road?
Here you
Stop
go.
It. What is, I should, I'm I, guessing I, this means he's going to go Saquon Barkley, but listen, I will be short here. Baker Mayfield, hands down, should win the NFL Rookie of the Year award.
Look,
not even a debate.
It's Saquon Barkley. You're right. It's not even a debate. You had to qualify all your stuff with rookie. Broke the season record for rookies as far as touchdowns. He lost, but he's a rookie. I don't have to use that qualifier with Saquon Barkley because guess what? He is already one of the best, not rookie running backs in the league, running backs in the league. Todd Gurley, Ezekiel Elliott, and Saquon Barkley. He led the NFL in yards from scrimmage. Total yards from scrimmage, all right, over 2,000. He was second in the NFL in rushing. He averaged 5 yards per carry. He led the NFL in most rushes for 20 yards or more. This dude, Baker Mayfield, we aren't even thinking about in terms of one of the best quarterbacks. We compare him to Saquon or to Sam Darnold and to Lamar Jackson and so on and so forth. We're not daring to bring him up with Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady and even Patrick Mahomes. We're not putting him in that category. Saquon Barkley, a Pro Bowler, by the way, is already in that category. And by the way, Baker Mayfield isn't even second. It's Lamar Jackson. How about he's the rookie quarterback that beat your rookie quarterback. They're 6-1. If it wasn't for Lamar Jackson,
leading them to the playoffs.
John Harbaugh might be fired and without a job right now if it wasn't for Lamar Jackson. You talk about a culture change.
You're just talking about
mic drop.
All you have is the typical sizzle of Baker Mayfield because of his persona. But Chris is 100% right. He's not even second. And Saquon Barkley also, Chris, with all the things that you mentioned and how well he did, also had the record for catches – For a rookie running back. I mean, he obliterated all the stats, did everything, and he's not just a great rookie player. He's a great player, period. And Baker Mayfield, when you look deep, he only beat one team with a winning record, and that was Baltimore early in the season when they weren't good and didn't have Lamar Jackson. All the other stats and numbers, go look at all of the numbers he put up against Cincinnati. Cincinnati's defensive coordinator got fired because they gave up 500 yards a game. So that's what Baker Mayfield was eating off of. He didn't beat anybody. He went up against weak defenses and was able to flourish. So when you take a look at it, he's not rookie, the offensive rookie of the year.
Can
not
I ask a question,
year.
Rob?
He's third in that.
Since you want to talk about great teams that Baker Mayfield beat, who did Saquon Barkley beat? You got anybody? He didn't win any. They won four or five games.
Wait a minute. No.
Oh, wait, here we go. Wait, okay.
I'll give it to you. That team with Eli Manning and some of the other stuff that was going on, he didn't do anything to cause that team not to win any games. And that's when you have to take a look at it.
Oh, so he's getting all the credit when they do well. But it's not Saquon's fault
We didn't mention any team achievements. We mentioned individual achievements.
That's what we're talking about.
But he just mentioned team achievements.
No, I'm telling you that
Mayfield.
Baker
didn't beat nobody.
He didn't beat anybody when you bring up that. And here's the other thing. Last year,
the team did not win a game last year.
You're right, and it was 1 to 2 years ago.
Yes.
But here's my point. Before the season started, they made all these moves. Everybody knew the Browns were going to be better even before Baker was going to be quarterback. Yes, indeed. And when they went to get Tyrod Taylor, the whole idea was they needed to start winning some games because it had only been one win in 2 years. Go look at the moves that they made prior to Baker. This was a better team. Most people believe they were going to win 5 or 6 games minimum even before Baker took over the job.
I didn't research this. How many did people think Saquon was going to lead the New York Giants to?
Both Rob and I, as much as we like Saquon Barkley, we believe the Giants should have drafted a quarterback.
Absolutely.
Or Sam Darnold. No matter how great Saquon Barkley is, a running back doesn't typically lead you to great success.
I was waiting for you to say that.
So Mayfield has the narrative. What you're buying into is the narrative.
Buying into 0 wins to 7.
Yeah, you're buying into the narrative.
Okay, that's a narrative.
You know, who was the more productive?
They won 7 games because of Jarvis Landry and Miles
Garrett.
Who
was the more productive player? Honestly, it was Saquon
Barkley.
How do you
judge productivity?
Making others
better?
Stats are one way.
Well, I don't know. Baker Mayfield
Pro
made the
entire
team better.
Pro Bowls and accolades are another? Is Baker Mayfield in the conversation for best quarterbacks in the NFL?
I don't think yet. He's
okay.
Young.
Is Saquon Barkley
anybody
in the conversation?
Anybody can jump into the conversation for best running back in a
really?
Heartbeat. Yeah. Kareem Hunt came out of nowhere, was one of the best running backs in
but
the
he,
league.
But
Le'Veon Bell was out of the league. Like, anybody at running back can get production.
Not anybody.
Adrian
not the Peter- numbers that you're
Rob,
talking about. 2,000 yards from
Peterson
scrimmage.
Adrian Peterson is 33 years old. He was one of the 7 leading rushers
They don't
in
even
the
run the football anymore
I'm
in this
just
league.
Saying, like, anybody
And the same
can
thing when you talk
in.
About his throwing numbers. Everybody throws the football. It's a passing league, so I get it. That's why his numbers are higher. And when the game mattered the most against Baltimore, you want to prove something, show me something? He could have won that game for them, Chris.
Wait, where was Saquon Barkley in the season finale against Dallas? He should have won that game.
I'm telling you, he was in a moment, and what did he do? He threw a pick. That's what he did.
What did Saquon Barkley do in the moment against the Cowboys when they lost to Dak Prescott in week 17? At home, mind you, against the Cowboys. Tell me, I forgot what
Saquon
did.
Was he out on defense when Dallas scored the last touchdown?
Was he on offense? Why didn't he just move the chains and work it down the field for a game?
Didn't they lose? Didn't they score 34 points in that game?
Oh,
they weren't shut out?
Rob, I can't believe you're arguing for Saquon here. I thought you were smarter than that.
It's not even close.
I know, Baker, by a landslide.
Because he changed the culture?
Change the culture.
If that's the argument. Okay, go ahead.
0 wins to 7. They went 0 to 7.
Okay.
The Cleveland Browns were one of the better teams in the second half of the season. You guys know Football Outsiders, right? They do this advanced metrics. You know the Cleveland Browns are one of the 10 best teams in the second half of the season? That's
Baker Mayfield. In that poll, where were the Ravens? In the second half of the
Ravens
season.
Were tremendous second half
Where
of the
were,
season.
Higher than the Browns?
The New York Giants were
higher
nowhere.
Than the Browns. Okay, your argument for
the Baltimore
for
Ravens
Baker
are
Mayfield,
built on running.
Your
and
argument
defense.
For Baker Mayfield, but running now behind Lamar Jackson.
Lamar has been incredible.
All right.
I'm not giving
your
a guy
argument
who played
for
seven
Baker
games.
Mayfield is third.
I can make the same argument for Lamar Jackson even better. You want to talk about culture change. Lamar Jackson. You want to talk about wins. When's the last time the Ravens have made the playoffs? 2014? Something like that?
Lamar's been
Look at the wins that they've had.
Can I get a timeout?
I'm just saying,
you're an NBA MVP voter, right?
Right.
If somebody misses half the season, can you give them the MVP award?
No.
Lamar Jackson has played how many games?
I'm not giving him.
Seven. But that's why can he win Rookie of the Year with?
I'm not giving him
games?
The award. Okay. I'm saying he's higher than Baker Mayfield.
How
Mayfield
is he
did? When did he? He's changed the culture. He's led them to the playoffs.
I would say Lamar.
Now
is a,
I would.
A third
I would say this:
one.
If a guy in the NBA, his team was floundering, the coach was about to get fired. They were talking about rebuilding, and he comes in from halfway through the season totally leads a change. Something like a 6-1 record, the equivalent over the second half of the season. Then maybe he gets in the MVP.
Lamar gets Jackson all the credit. Has one 200-yard passing game. But I think he's been great.
It's about W's for the quarterbacks.
I like them
for the quarterbacks.
I like the Ravens.
Baker
a lot,
Mayfield just gets a lot of attention because he gets clicks. And I know people are so caught up on that.
Clicks, yeah.
I know he does, and that's what you love about him. Yeah. But I'm just talking about, you just saw Lamar Jackson go on the road with Chargers, right, in a game that was big that they needed. Right. And beat them to get his team into the playoffs. You got to give him credit. And this,
he's getting credit.
No, but the reason that Chris and I both are saying, no, we're not picking him as the Rookie of the Year, is because you're right, he didn't play enough games or all the games. But Saquon Barkley would be number one, no question about it. And then I would even take Lamar ahead of Baker.
I can understand the Saquon. I would not go Lamar ahead of Baker. Let me add this, okay? The Cleveland Browns have a head coaching opening, right? You look at any of the lists put out by any of the NFL insiders, the number one most coveted job right now is the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
Why? It ain't because of Jabril Peppers or Nick Chubb. It's because of that guy on the screen.
It's because there's no expectations when you take a job like that. There's not, first of all.
Excuse me, a team that hasn't won in forever, there's major expectations.
No, nobody's going to. If
they
you go
just
there,
won seven
Bill Belichick
games.
Failed in Cleveland.
They
you
were
can
on,
go, anybody can go to Cleveland, and no one's going to hold you to the fire. A tough job to go to is to go to Green Bay, where they have a tradition at a quarterback, and not win. That's the job you get.
Cleveland can win 10 games or get to the playoffs,
and people will be ecstatic.
People will be happy because it's been such a drought. That's what it's some expectations, but not like Green Bay.
Listen, I know you're an Ohio guy. I'm not taking a shot here, but not a lot of people are going to want to move to Cleveland, relocate their family there.
You could say it's better than moving to Green Bay. Apologies to Green Bay, but I'm just saying.
But people want that job because of Baker Mayfield. Guys, you talk about Nick Foles earlier in the show. You said Nick Foles, man, there's a magic around him. There seems to be some magic around Baker Mayfield. What that team did in the second half of the season to go from zero wins last year and irrelevant at the start with Tyrod Taylor to, oh, my gosh, it's week 15 and they're alive? You got to give Baker the props here. They're only there because of him.
I like Baker Mayfield. He's had a good season. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying it's not a better season than Saquon Barkley and Lamar Jackson. That's all I'm saying.
I can't
but
believe
he's had
I'm
a good season.
In my ear, they're saying rap. So I got to walk out with another victory.
Save you.
3-0, baby.
It's getting ugly.
Jason,
it's getting embarrassing
thank
for
you so much
yes,
for joining
you,
us.
No mercy.
Now, who is the greatest player in NBA history? LeBron or Jordan? MJ was 6-0 in the finals, but LeBron recently said that bringing the Cavs back from a 3-1 deficit in the 2016 finals against the Warriors made him the greatest of all time. Take a listen.
That one right there made me the greatest player of all time.
For so many reasons.
I was super, super ecstatic to win one for Cleveland because of the 52-year drought. Like, I was ecstatic. Like, obviously, I showed that the first wave of emotion was when y'all, everyone saw me crying. Like, that was all for 52 years, everything in sports had gone on in Cleveland. And then after I stopped, I was like, that one right there made you the greatest player of all time. You know, everybody was just talking how they were the greatest team of all time. Like, they was the greatest team ever assembled. And for us to come back, you know, the way we came back in that fashion, I was like, you did something special. That's probably one of the only times in my career I felt like, oh, like you did something special. I haven't had time to really like sit back and think, but that was a moment.
Chris, is this crazy for LeBron to say?
That's your boy, Chris.
He can feel that way, mm-hmm. that he's the greatest player, mm-hmm. But I'm surprised he said it. I've talked with Michael Jordan, texted with Michael Jordan about, you know, the GOAT conversation, this and that. And Jordan always says you can't compare eras. Now, if anybody could say they're the GOAT, it's Michael Jordan. He's never said it. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar could say it. He's never said it. I'm not going to kill him for saying it, and I'm going to get to why in a minute.
But it's surprising to hear somebody come out and say it. Now, I'm starting to wonder, LeBron has always said, I want to be like Muhammad Ali, you know, and in terms of being a global icon, in terms of his off the court, you know, outside of the sport work, and he's obviously doing great stuff there. But one of the things that makes us feel like Muhammad Ali was the greatest, because, you know, he lost fights and all that, was him saying it over and over again. He told us, I'm the greatest, I'm the greatest. Even when he lost, I'm the greatest. And we bought into it. And he was tremendous. And part of me wonders, is LeBron saying, I'm going to start putting it out there? Because remember, he said a few years ago he should be on Mount Rushmore. You know, he said a few years ago, I'm chasing the ghost in Chicago. I'm wondering, does he feel like this is a way to get myself on the top of that discussion? Now, you and I agree, he's not the GOAT. Now, I would challenge LeBron to say, look, if you're saying this, I mean, he said it, he would be in 2016, which is ridiculous. You can't say Cleveland hadn't won in 52 years. Well, Chicago was a joke of a franchise before Michael Jordan got there.
I'm glad you brought that up.
He turned them into a dynasty, not just one championship. If LeBron, I don't think he can really pass Michael Jordan. But if you want to do something to make people really think you the GOAT, then go out and lead the Lakers this year.
But this
that's
is
the
my,
type of thing to the championship.
Chris, here's the problem. It's not classy. You're not supposed to pat yourself on the back. That's what other people say about you. That's why you've never heard Michael Jordan use that term to describe himself, because that's not what you do. All right? A lot of people call Tom Brady the GOAT. Have you ever heard Tom Brady say he's the GOAT? Of course not. And that's the problem with it. LeBron knows he's not, so he's the one going out trying to, you know, promote himself right, and put it out there. And the Muhammad Ali comparison doesn't work. Boxing is an individual thing. It's a part of the cell of who you are and the boxing thing. It's not, oh, I'm the greatest. He was saying that before he ever won.
Right.
So that was just do you know what I'm saying? It wasn't after he won the title that he said he was the greatest. He said he was the greatest, period. Before he beat Sonny Liston and whatnot.
So
it's totally different. And LeBron comes off bad when he's the one who has to go around and promote himself and tell everybody that that was the moment. He didn't win that by himself. He had other teammates. It's totally
Kyrie, especially.
Kyrie made the big right. 3-point shot to win it and seal the finals. I'm not saying LeBron didn't play well and he had to block before that. Kevin Love was on that team, J.R. Smith. There were other players and other people who also are included. So how could that moment? What about the 6 losses in the NBA Finals? That didn't count? What about those?
I think LeBron is in a place, and it's been entertaining, Shut Up and Dribble, The Shop, More Than an Athlete, which is what this was from, where he feels he can say anything. He really is saying what he wants. And it's, again, it's good entertainment. I guess it's the barbershop. You can say whatever you want.
It's called Hollywood. Maybe
but
he's checked
even
out.
Walking in with the wine into a game, I've never seen anybody walk in a workplace with wine. In any type of workplace other than maybe a winery, you know.
Right.
And so that, to me, is a person who's like, they feeling themselves, I can do whatever I want. And almost testing the water. How far are people going to let me go, you know, and how much I can do? And we'll see if it works out for him. He's doing some great stuff with all these. I mean, we said it. He moved to Hollywood, and he is capitalizing on it. It's
which,
great,
which is all
interesting
fine.
Stuff for us. But, yeah, it's. I think he's gotten there where he thinks he can say anything.
It comes off tacky.
It did feel a little weird, but if anyone could test it, it's LeBron. He's the one who
kind
of pushed the limits.
Well, it's
going
to make people hold you to a higher level.
I know. No mercy.
Thanks for listening to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm Jenny Taft. Join us again at the same time tomorrow morning, 9:30 Eastern. We'll see you then.
Facts, sports, one of one.